getting you healthy, happy, and doing what you love. You're listening to Tonic Podcast, the podcast of Dr. Tanya Winchester. Dr. Tanya is a licensed naturopathic doctor, acupuncturist, body talk practitioner, and edutainer with a passion for helping reduce pain and suffering and bringing more love, joy, and health into your life and into the world. The natural medicines and therapies mentioned in this podcast are not intended as medical advice or as a substitute for seeking medical attention. For more information about Dr. Tanya Winchester, visit Dr. Tanya, T-O-N-I-A, Winchester.com. This is Far of Tonic Podcasts, and I'm here with Dr. Tanya Winchester, and today our subject is brain health, and it's in honor of Brain Injury Awareness Month.
Yeah, I think Brain Health Awareness Month, yes.
So tell us a little bit about brain health.
Okay, well, the brain is an organ in our body, and it needs a lot of nutrients. So if we think about, for example, blood glucose, right? So that's our blood sugar. The brain proportionally uses far more blood sugar than the rest of the body does. And it's also covered in fat. The fat surrounding the nerve cells help the nerves communicate more effectively and quickly. So when we think about delicious things, sugar and fat, that's what the brain needs too. Although we need to find healthy ways of getting those things in there. So cupcakes are delightful, but not necessarily great for brain health.
So what kind of fats are healthy fats and good for the brain?
Yes. So you want to be focusing on things like fish oil. And if you are a vegan, then there are other options. Walnuts can do this quite nicely. Avocados, coconut oil, and even extra virgin olive oil. And these can just be part of your dietary experience every day. And fish oil is one to sort of consider taking as a supplement. And all of these things are going to be anti-inflammatory, but also supporting the health of these nerve cells.
And how important is cold extraction or cold press in terms of quality of oils?
Yeah, I mean, anytime we're doing things as sort of gently as possible, that's going to make a healthier oil. So heat can destabilize oils and make them less than optimal for ingestion.
Mm-hmm. So healthy fats, which you mentioned, what else is important in terms of nutrients for brain health?
Lots of color. So antioxidants, it's a buzzword that we hear all about, and they come from gorgeously colored fruits and vegetables. So upping your greens, for sure, dark green leafies are great for this, and also including a rainbow of vegetables in the diet. So try to get something from each color of the rainbow every day. Red, orange, yellow, green, blue, and purple.
What's an example of a blue vegetable?
Like a blueberry, I would put in that category.
And purple?
Beets, or purple carrots, or blackberries, I would probably put in that category.
So trying to eat as colorful as possible every day?
Yes.
And are there any herbs or any plants that are really helpful for brain health?
There are so many, and a few of my favorites. My favorite actually is rosemary, and so this is just your generic garden variety, literally rosemary, and its official Latin name is Rose Marianus officinalis, and we learned it in school as the herb of remembrance. And when I say that to my husband, he says that it's actually the herb of chicken. But it is a wonderful, wonderful herb to stimulate cognition, focus, and memory. I would have essential oils going as I was studying, and I would make myself rosemary tea. It's such a beautiful herb for the brain. It's just my favorite, absolutely.
So tea, is that just the dried rosemary plant?
Yeah. You can just make it like a cup of tea, like any other herb. That's right. You can put it in, of course, food that you're making, or you can have it as a nice warm beverage. I love it that way.
And do those things also work, rosemary in particular, in terms of tinctures or in terms of some kind of supplement?
Yep, absolutely. That could definitely work as well. But it's such an easy to find and easy to access herb that why not use it in its whole plant form?
Mm-hmm. So what else is helpful for brain health?
Ginkgo is one you've probably heard of. Why the reason ginkgo helps is it helps circulation, which we'll talk a little bit more about down the road here, but it helps open up the blood vessels so that the brain can get access to that sugar that we were talking about and also the other nutrients it needs, those antioxidants. So ginkgo is a lovely delivery system for those nutrients to the brain. Turmeric is another lovely one, fitting in our orange of our rainbow. Very anti-inflammatory, also great for the blood vessels, great antioxidant. Also, all of these herbs mimic as great liver herbs, which is interesting to me. And the last herb that I like to use with my patients is bacopa, which is probably one people haven't heard of and a bit more specialized. You might find that at a naturopathic doctor's office.
And what does bacopa do specifically?
Bacopa is very similar. It's going to open up blood vessels. It helps with the inflammation in the brain, if there is any. And again, delivering those nutrients to the brain.
Now, earlier on, you mentioned the brain needs fats and sugars. Do you want to mention anything about the kinds of sugars that are helpful for the brain?
Right. So the brain is actually accessing glucose, which is one of our very simple sugars. It can get that from anywhere, from any food. Like if you were just to eat normal white sugar, it would get the glucose out of that, or your body would make it anyways after you'd eaten the food. But it's good to consider that we don't want to spike our blood sugar, because that's actually going to lead to other problems down the road. And so finding sources of sugars that are more complex, we call these more starches. These come from grains, rice, more quinoa. Vegetables have lots of, fruits have lots of sugars. The body will take all of those more complicated starches and make sugar out of them and deliver that to the brain. Again, trying to just fit into that rainbow of color options for food and nutrient intake. Oh, one, going back to foods, actually, as we're still on that topic, one thing that's really useful for brain health is eggs, and particularly egg yolks. So there's a molecule in there called choline, which is also sort of like a delivery system for nutrients in the brain.
And any other foods that are helpful specifically for the brain?
I think we've given a good enough overview there. I think those are the main categories: healthy oils, greens, antioxidants, rainbow, egg yolks. Anytime we're thinking about brain health, we need to think about gut health. And I've probably mentioned this in other podcasts, but there's a lot of good data now that shows that the gut is doing a lot of nervous system work for us. So we can call it the second brain. It produces serotonin for us, which is one of those feel-good chemicals in the brain. It can change how our immune system is functioning, which could then improve or not brain health depending on the direction that that's going. The gut is full of nerve cells, and so the two are really connected, and there's a lot of sort of interesting information now that signals are going from the gut to the brain as well as from the brain to the gut. So we can't deny the gut when we're talking about a healthy brain.
So we've been talking in general about brain health, but what about brain injuries?
Yeah, that's a great question, and a lot of this still applies. We would definitely want to be providing the same amount of nutrition to the brain tissue. So something like a concussion, for example, we would want to be making sure that all of these nutrients are getting in there. So from a treatment perspective, in that way, we're still trying to really maximize that nutrition. There's other things that we can do as well for brain injuries. There's some very specialized antioxidants that we might decide to use, something like glutathione. As an example, we can do acupuncture is very successful for that type of thing. And sometimes I'll even do IV nutrients with those patients just to make sure that we're actually getting the stuff right into the bloodstream versus the gut having to extract it. So just direct line right into the bloodstream.
So that's concussion. Are there other types of brain injury or brain diseases or brain dysfunctions?
Sure. Why don't we start? There's tons of different ways that the brain can be healthy or not, but let's start with a stroke. And so a stroke is, there can be two types of stroke. A stroke is, has to do with blood vessels. So it's partially related to the cardiovascular system. But one type of stroke is called a hemorrhagic stroke, and that is when a blood vessel sort of bursts in the brain and causes a bleed in the brain, depriving other areas of the brain of oxygen, and also the direct contact to the blood is toxic to the brain cells, so it can be quite damaging. And then the second type of stroke is a ischemic stroke, and that is basically when there's a clot, a blockage in the blood vessel that's preventing nutrients and oxygen to get to the blood tissue downstream of that vessel. One of the best ways to prevent stroke, besides what we've already talked about, is to actually donate blood. And this is particularly relevant for men and particularly relevant for menopausal women. There are studies that show that blood donors have a decreased incidence of adverse cardiovascular event, in this case we're talking about stroke, from anywhere from 65% to 85%.
Really?
Medications can't do that. Medications decrease your risk by 1% to 2%. So donating blood is potently preventative for strokes. And so if you're not donating blood, I highly encourage you to do so.
And why is that? How does it work when you donate blood that it's good for your cardiovascular health?
Essentially, the blood donation acts like a blood thinning. It's quite complicated, but that's the essential. I do have an article on this that I will put in the show notes, but essentially where our blood vessels branch, which happens a lot in the brain, there's very tiny vessels branching all over the place. The blood flow at that branch point can get very turbulent. Think of a river that's narrowing or is branching, and there's a lot of sort of those swirls and whirls at that branch point. So that turbulent blood causes, can damage the blood vessels essentially, which then the body takes cholesterol, not the enemy. It takes cholesterol and uses cholesterol to, like, basically, I'm using my hands a lot here. I wish you could all see. Next video. Okay. And so the cholesterol is used as like a scab, and these scabs are used to fill these holes, and eventually that, unfortunately, scab can become a blockage. So if we do this blood donation, the theory is that it sort of thins the blood and makes the blood less turbulent at these branch points. Whew. That's a good physiology lesson for you.
And why in particular for men and postmenopausal women?
Well, premenopausal women have a monthly bleed. Their monthly donation to the tampon gods, yes, does the same thing physiologically.
Mm-hmm. So once we stop doing that, then it's really helpful to set up a monthly donor card at the Red Cross or
absolutely
something like that. To...
And they're hard up for donors, so it's a win-win-win. Oh, this is a funny story. So the fellow who told me and my colleagues this information with and showed us all the studies about this, we were at a conference, so there's 500 of my colleagues in this room, and one of our sort of mentors in the profession is telling us this information, And he was so shocked because we didn't know about it. He didn't know about it. So he had this friend who works for a blood donation facility in the States. And he went to that person and he said, "Why are you not using this in your marketing? Why are you not saying, please come donate blood? It's a win, 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 win. And, you know, improve your health. reduce your risk of heart attack and stroke. And his friend said, we only want people to donate blood for altruistic reasons. And there was just silence in the room. We were all just so shocked that this person had said that. And he just said, there are not enough middle fingers in the world. That's how he felt. He was very aggravated that she said this. But anyways, let's get the word out. Donate blood. It's one of your best stroke prevention techniques that there is.
Wow, that's really surprising. Something I hadn't heard before. So what about degenerative brain diseases that can be associated with aging, like Alzheimer's or dementia or things like that? What kinds of things can be helpful to prevent that?
Yes, and all of these same things apply. So the right nutrients, the right fats. We haven't talked about exercise, but exercise is very valuable. Deep breathing, all of these things. And even when someone is diagnosed, a lot of the sort of ill effects of those illnesses can be reversed with this type of approach. And this, that would be an example where we would kind of want to up the and get very specific into the antioxidants that we're actually using. But really the nice thing about this system is that no matter what's going on, the same principles apply. Like, we need to get the good nutrition in there, and we need to get the blood flow in there to get that good nutrition in there. So same ideas.
What impact does exercise have on the brain?
Yeah, oh my gosh, so many studies about that. Great data around mood disorders and how exercise is as effective, if not more effective, than antidepressant medications. It's about blood flow again. It's opening up blood vessels to the brain. It's about relaxation and allowing the system to release stress. It's about, we're designed to move as humans. We're not designed to sit at a desk, right? So exercise is just absolutely vital.
And I imagine even more so for people who aren't athletically inclined.
Yes. I mean, everyone needs to move their bodies, no matter how inclined you are.
So what would you recommend for someone who, you know, has some resistance to exercise?
Yes. Well, first of all, find something that's fun and do that and do it often. If there's absolutely nothing that you find fun, then that's a whole other topic. But start walking, start doing something, like move your body, get physical. Ooh, let's get physical. Thank you, Olivia Newton-John, for that little callback. Even if it's just setting a timer for 5 minutes and prancing around your bedroom or putting on your favorite Justin Timberlake song and shaking your booty, you gotta move. Like, there's no excuses that we can make, just move.
So walking, dancing, gardening, any kind of activity.
All the things, weights, burpees, resistance work, bike riding, all of the swimming, all of the things, move the body.
Mm-hmm. And about deep breathing, how does deep breathing affect the brain?
Again, oxygen. That's what it comes down to. So there's a couple things going on. Breathing will oxygenate the blood, which is then going to get delivered to the brain, but also changing our stress response, putting us back into rest and digest mode and heal mode versus being in fight or flight mode. And when we're not experiencing that stress hormone cortisol racing through our body, then our memory is going to be better, because cortisol interrupts how memories are laid down and how memories are recalled. Cortisol changes how we're able to sleep, and if we're not sleeping, then we're not healing our brain and consolidating those memories. So breathing is something that's free and completely accessible that is going to absolutely impact the health of the brain.
So many options for improving brain health.
You got it.
And is there anything we didn't cover? We covered brain health in general, brain injury, stroke, cognitive function. Anything else that we're missing in terms of brain health?
I think we have exhausted what we have time for today. I think we've done a great job.
Thank you so much.
Oh, actually, there is one more thing.
One more thing. What is that one more thing?
Psych. So there is a technique that I use in some work I do called Body Talk, which is called Cortices. And this is a tapping technique that can wake up the brain. So if you're having a sluggish moment, if you're having a foggy headed kind of day, really good for re-alertifying yourself. And that is a word I just made up. Cortices is a technique that does need to be sort of demonstrated visually. So I'm going to put a video to that in the show notes and a handout about how to do it written out as well. So you'll
and
be able to...
tapping different parts of the skull?
Tapping on one part of the skull. I think it's too complicated to describe via voice. So I will put, yeah, a video link in the notes.
Great. Well, thank you so much. It's been lots of learning, and let's hope this inspires people to integrate some of what you said into their daily routines.
Agreed. Happy brain healing.
You've been listening to Tonic Podcast, the podcast of Dr. Tanya Winchester, getting you healthy, happy, and doing what you love. The natural medicines and therapies mentioned in this podcast are not intended as medical advice or as a substitute for seeking medical attention. For any health concern, it's always best to make an appointment to see a licensed medical practitioner. For more articles and blog posts, visit Dr. Tanya, T-O-N-I-A, Winchester.com, or visit us in beautiful Nanaimo, BC at Tonic Naturopathic Clinic. Have a delightful day.